You are listening to 1440 in Fort Worth, Texas. For more information, visit 1440.com.
The part that I wanted to show got cut off, but it ended with this girl running into her daddy's arms, and that was the coach's daughter. And so that was me growing up. Every Friday night, I spent at the football game. And you're probably wondering why. Dad was a football coach, and I grew up going to support Dad every single Friday night. And you're like, really, every single, birth to 16. Yes, every Friday night of football season, I was there. So you're probably wondering, why am I telling you this? Well, tonight, our title is Tebowing, referencing God. Anybody know anything about Tebow? If you don't, when I'm done, you will. So, football is very special to me, and some of you girls are like, oh no, I'm not going to understand a thing she's saying. No, really, I'll help you understand. The reason I'm sharing a little bit of this with you is to develop some credibility, because you're like, can Jen really play? I'll answer that question later. But I'm not just the girl that grew up liking football because Tom Brady was cute and I root for the Patriots. You know what I mean? Like, there's some out there like, let's see, which quarterback's cuter? Yeah, they're going to win. That wasn't me. I was born with a football in my hand. Not really. My brother was. But again, I'm kidding. I grew up in a family where priorities were faith, so God, family, football. And I'm really not kidding. It was faith, family, football. And that is how our household was run. So I have a few pictures. Do you want to see Jen when she was a baby?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. That is me and Daddy. And every year, well, that was even younger. Rostovsky number one, that's me. and then I think I have one more, and it's with me and my brother. Aww, aren't they cute? For my dad's 60th birthday, I took that picture and blew it up and made a fake magazine cover that said MVP, your number one. But we love football. So growing up, my dad would always have portraits done, you know, with the team every year. They have a team picture. So then they would get a little outfit for Coach R. No one can say Rostovsky. So it was Coach R. So if I say Coach R, that's my dad. So I was number one Rostovsky. And so we had all those pictures growing up. And I would pretty much hear stories about football. Most things relate to football. I actually remember I brought a guy home once to meet my dad. And it was a scary experience. And when he left, I said, what do you think, Dad? And his analogy just, it really got me. He goes, Jennifer, you're a first-round draft pick. He didn't even make the cut. And I was like, yes, sir, coach, sir. That's how Dad communicates with me, is through football language. So tonight I'm going to try to make that relatable to you. But I would hear about these stories growing up. Anybody heard of John Elway? You have not heard of John Elway? Okay, let me educate you. John Elway was the quarterback of the Denver Broncos. Anybody watch the game last Sunday? Denver Broncos, Tebow's team. He was the quarterback for that team from 1983 to 1998. So for about 15 years, he was a quarterback for the Broncos. Well, my dad coached football at Cal State Northridge under his dad, Jack Elway. So my dad would go to John Elway High School football games. And so I grew up hearing about, oh, I used to watch him play football when he was in high school. And I'm like, you did? So football became this big thing to me. Well, Dad quit coaching at a college level because he wanted to have a family. And that's where I came into the picture. Coaching, for any of you who know about that field, it takes up your life. It's all-consuming. Some people's priorities, when I listed our priorities, faith, family, football, a lot of families in that arena, it goes football, a few other things, faith and family, because it's all-consuming. And so he knew if he wanted to have a family, he had to make a priority shift. And so he decided to coach high school football. So we would move around when I was little for different high school positions that he had. And so every Friday night was like that game. We'd run onto the field and we'd greet Daddy. And I'm very similar to that blonde in there, very feisty. And if you've seen the movie, she likes to call the plays and then she gets really upset and aggressive. And that was me. And then I went through a phase where I'd decided that I wanted to be the cheerleader, so then I'd put on these little cheerleader outfits. I didn't bring any pictures, I promise. Put on these little cheerleading outfits, and then I'd be the cheerleader with the cheerleaders for a while. But then I just started going to the sidelines because none of my friends would come with me. Try getting a second grade girl to, hey, what are you doing Friday night? I'm going to a football game. You want to come? No, TJF is on. You know, like they just didn't want football. And so I grew up playing on the sidelines with my brother and my friends, which were guys because they were the ones that liked football. Well, that was Friday nights, okay? Friday nights, college football. Sundays was NFL. And then Mondays were Monday Night Football. And you're like, what? And I'm like, okay, you think that's bad? We watched the pregame, the game, and the postgame because we had to catch every dynamic of the game. It wasn't until I was in, I think I moved here about 5 years ago, I found myself turning on TV to Sunday Night Football. And I was like, ah, this feels good. But growing up, I'd fight over the remote control. I'm like, can we please watch the Miss America pageant? Can we please watch ice skating? And my brother's like, ice skating? So I chose football to spend time with the people I love versus watching what I want. Because we had two TVs, and I could have gone downstairs and watched what I wanted to watch. But I chose to be with the family. So I do know a little bit about football. I know what a first down is, a touchback, field goal. Like, I know what these things are. Some of you might have played with me out there. Yeah, really. I've played out there. If anybody wants to play tonight, I'll play. I brought a change of shoes. Any girls with me? Oh, there's two. I called it. I knew you would. I knew it. I was like, if anybody plays, it's Nadezda. She's going to play with me. I know this. But anyway, I made my dad proud. And so you're wondering, can Jen really play football? Yes. I played college football. Now, it was intramurals, but it was college football. And so I went away to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I never knew football could be so big until I came to the South. Like, you just bleed football down here. And so I joined an intramurals team. In college, girls team, of course, and you wonder, can girls really, girls are some of the most scrappiest, aggressive players you will ever meet. I'm not kidding. They will tear it up out there. They don't care who's in their way. They just want the ball, and so they go for it. So I played quarterback and had all these blockers, and so the goal was to never get hurt. I did get pantsed a few times, and that was really awkward, but... So I can tell you, it wasn't touch football, you know, so I've been pushed around a few times. But I made Dad proud. And all of that to say, when I talk about football tonight, yes, I know what I'm talking about. And yes, I can play. And there will be some fun. So you girls are like, oh, she still lost me. But we're going to incorporate some fun things, so you're going to get something out of it, I promise. So who's heard about the craze Tebowing? Anybody heard about this phenomenon called Tebowing? Can anybody come up here and show me what T-bowing is? Eric, come up. Can you get up here and just show them what T-bowing is? Beautiful, nicely done. Thank you. T-bowing, by definition, is to get down on one knee and start praying, even if everyone else around you is doing something completely different. Now, the originator of this was Tim Tebow, and I think I have a picture for you. For those of you who don't know who Tim Tebow is. Yay, Tim! That's Tim. He plays for the Broncos. I could tell you a whole lot more about him. But anyway, I've done quite a bit of research on him in the last couple weeks or so, and you're like, why? Well, I've learned a few things. He loves God, and from my perspective, it's not just a front. And I'm going to show you guys an interview later with him that shares his heart on it. He's very public about his faith. The other thing I learned about him is he looks so much like my brother that it's weird. And I have a picture of that too because I had to compare the two. I just can't. I can't get over it. And oh, you probably want to know which one's which, right? The one in the camel-colored coat is my brother, JD. And the one in the black t-shirt is Tim Tebow. So I've been informed that I'm not allowed to marry him because that would be weird. So I'm not going to try. But well, I thought about it. No, I won't. I promise. So anyway, I have this new joke with my brother. I will find pictures of Tim Tebow. And my brother plays golf, too. And Tim does some fundraising things with golf. I call him Tim like he's my friend. Tim Tebow plays golf. And I found a picture, and my brother plays golf, and it looked so much like my brother that I almost lost track for a second of, like, is this my brother? Is this Tebow? So it's become this joke with a lot of people that know my brother. His Facebook wall gets plastered with Tebow pictures and, like, oh, my gosh, were you here? And he's like, no, it's not me. And so I tried to get him to fly in tonight, but he couldn't. But anyway, I'm going to get off of the little J.D. Tebow kick, and I'll get to the point here. I looked up bow because I wanted to see a lot of people. There's controversy about Tebowing. They're like, he makes a big deal about this. Is it really heartfelt? And so I started looking through some things. And so I wanted to be like, what does it mean to bow? And it, what Eric displayed for us, it's to bend or incline the knee, body or head, in worship, submission, and out of respect. It's to cause, to submit, or to subdue. So really, it's an act of respect. To submit yourself, to get down and be below someone, which in the Tebowing, it would be below God, and to submit yourself. It's an act of respect. So why would someone want to bow? Well, we see people bow before kings and queens and royalty, or if leaders come through and you're at a big, you know, presidential summit, people, you know, just kind of honor them. But the word says in Ecclesiastes 12:13, it says, fear God and obey all his commands. This is the duty of every person. So bowing is a sign of respect. It shows submission. And when people hear the word fear, it automatically brings this almost negative aspect to the word because we're taught not to fear. And so when we hear fear the Lord, you're like, well, we're not supposed to fear, so what does that look like? And so I wanted to kind of do a little word study on fear to help you guys understand, because I too have kind of struggled with, okay, I'm supposed to fear God, but not fear anything else. So what does that look like? And so I looked up the word fear, and it means reverential awe, especially towards God. Some of the synonyms for it are awe, respect, and reverence. So when fear is in regards to the Lord, it's a positive thing. It's a good thing to fear the Lord, which means honor or respect or revere, to esteem him as high. Now, I looked up reverence because it's one of the synonyms of fear. And it's a gesture indicative of deep respect, to bow or to curtsy. So when someone's Tebowing, they are showing reverence. They are bowing to something. They're honoring something. So whenever you give fear a place in your life, it will take a place in your life. And so whatever people honor or respect will take a place. And so I wanted to see what the word said about to honor and to esteem. So let's turn to Isaiah 8, verse 13. It says, do not fear anything except the Lord Almighty. He alone is the Holy One. If you fear him, you need not fear anything else. And so in the word, you know, we hear about not to fear, but only to the Lord. So when we hear that word, instead of thinking of something negative, it's a positive. It's putting him above anything else in our life. It's putting him first place. So Tim Tebow was my example tonight of someone who fears the Lord. He publicly honors him. I've seen different articles on him and read some things, and I was trying to get to the bottom, like, you know, you hear all this controversy. I saw one of those street talk things where they go around and they interview people and are like, so what do you think about Tim Tebow? Should he really be allowed to do this? Do you think it's okay that he talks about God or that he makes this stance after every play or every touchdown? And you know, most people are like, you know, we want to respect the person, or, you know, whatever is good for him, as long as he keeps doing what he's doing and it doesn't mess with me, that's okay. But then there's other people who are like, I don't think it's heartfelt. I think he's just making a show. And so I was like, I really want to try to find something that explains his heart on the matter. So I found an interview with him on ESPN, and he was just being interviewed in general about his faith and why he does what he does. But I thought it was a great example of someone who, we hear about athletes, you know, and after the end of the speech, they'll say, God bless. Or you'll hear them say, I give all the glory to Jesus Christ. But you don't hear anything else beyond that. And so you just wonder, is that something they start to say just when they're in the public eye? And so I found this clip, and he explains why he does what he does in great detail, and explains his perspective on football versus God. And is football everything in the world, you know, even above God, or is it something that I just do? And so I wanted to show that to you guys. It's just about a 5-minute clip, but I think it'd be really good for you guys to see someone who's in a spotlight, even if you don't like football, someone who's famous and very popular who is not afraid to share the gospel, and he's very bold about it because it was on ESPN. It's not like he just wrote about it in an article. So if you guys have that ready, I would love to show that. Do you like that? I think a lot of times we build up professionals or famous people as these superhumans who have these amazing powers, or they're popular because of certain things that they've done. But really, Tim Tebow's just the same as you and me. He was raised on, actually born and raised in the Philippines. He was a missions child. He grew up in a Christian home. His dad was a pastor. And then he was actually homeschooled all the way through. And so some people would look at that and say, wow, for someone to have been out of the country and then raised in a homeschooling environment, and then they become famous in this respect, to have that skill that he has to be used for the glory of God. But I believe that Tim didn't just start following the Lord or giving him honor when he got that platform. I believe it's something that he had placed in him as a very young child who grew in that. And then when he got that platform, the Lord honored him by doing that. And so this platform's football. It's nothing special. I like the sport, but to me, it's just another game. And so there's some of you that have these aspirations of being a singer or being an actress or being famous for that. And it's what we do right now with the time that we have that's going to affect how we're going to act when we get that platform. And so the Lord's going to honor you when you honor him. And so that's the platform he's given. And I believe his heart behind that is, I had a gift and something I wanted to do with my life, and the Lord gave me that ability, and now I'm able to use that platform to speak. And so he has foundations to help kids, and even when he was in college, he still took his summers and went back to the Philippines. And so he takes what he does very seriously, as football's not his means. It's just an opportunity to speak. And so I thought it was cool that we all have dreams and want to do things, but it's not when we get there that we have it. We start figuring out how to act. It's what we do right now. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 12:14. And I'd read earlier, verse 13. Here's my final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands, for this is the duty of every person. But then it goes on in 14 to say, God will judge us in everything we do, including every secret thing, whether good or bad. And so it's not just what we do in public that's important. It's what we do when we're by ourselves, when we're alone with God, the quiet times we have. And so I wanted to ask a question. It says, we talked about Tebowing earlier, and when you bow your knees to something, you're submitting to him. But that has been a very public thing. But what do we do when we're bowing our knees when we're in private? Are you bowing to your knees to the Lord when you're home alone and you have access to the alcohol in the cabinet? Or are you bowing your knee when you're at school and you're having struggles on your test and you can see the person's paper next to you? Are you bowing your knee when you're alone at home with the internet and you're tempted to go onto websites that you wouldn't normally go on? Those moments are just as important to the Lord as the moments that you have in front of people to declare his glory. How you honor him and respect him and obey him in private is just as important as how you would obey him in the public. So everything we do should be giving him glory. We talk about the laws of reaping and sowing a lot, but as you give him glory, as you honor him and give him place in your life, he's going to honor you, and he's going to lift you up and give you that place. And I think a lot of times, I know I struggled with it, when I hear fear the Lord and you hear it with trembling, and I would think that's fear, that's scary. And I would ask myself, how do I do that in a way that it's with joy? Because the Lord says to do everything with gladness. And what does that mean? And so I was reading in Psalms 112 earlier today. And to me, it painted a picture of what fearing the Lord looks like, that it's not this depressing and scary thing, that it's something to be done with a smile on your face. And it says, happy are those who fear the Lord. Yes, happy are those who delight in doing what he commands. Their children will be successful everywhere. An entire generation of godly people will be blessed. They themselves will be wealthy, and their good deeds will never be forgotten. When darkness overtakes them, light will come bursting in. They are generous, compassionate, and righteous. all goes well for those who are generous, who lend freely and conduct their business fairly. And it skips down and says at the end that they will have influence and they will have honor. And so when I read this, it looked like something that it's a lifestyle. It's a place to live out of joy, that as I obey him, it's going to go well with me. As I honor him and give to who he says to give to, he's going to bless me. And when I read this, it says happy and blessed, wealthy, compassionate, generous, never forgotten, has influence and honor. To me, that defines a person that I want to be like. It defines somebody that it would draw people to. If you look up Tim Tebow's videos and look at different things about him, he's very lighthearted and he has blooper videos, and he just came out with a book and a DVD about, you know, just his autobiography, and he's having fun. And he's in public eye. He said all those things that we just heard on ESPN, the largest broadcasting for sports. And so he's confident about what he believes, and he's not ashamed of it, and he does it with joy. He's a lead quarterback of a national football team, and he's not afraid of what he thinks. Coaches have gotten saved in the process, teammates, and they pray before games. But his influence, it's because he enjoys what he's doing. People want to follow somebody who is confident and who is having fun at what they're doing. If someone sees that image, they're like, I want to be like that. I want to be drawn towards that. And so fearing the Lord just means putting him first. It means esteeming him as high above anything else. And so as we put him first, he's going to honor us in those ways. We're going to get our joys. We're going to get those things that we've always wanted because we're honoring him and we're his children and he wants to bless us. And so instead of looking at it as a scary and a fearful thing, it's something to be done with joy and excitement. Amen? Well, let's look at an example in the word of someone I was reading the other day, and I found Noah to be actually quite comical. As I started to research, like, what he really did, I thought, I wonder if I could really do that. Has anyone seen the movie Steve Carell? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to read out of the Bible, not the movie version. But if you turn to Genesis 6, we're going to read real quickly through his example. It says, this is the history of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, the only blameless man living on earth at this time. He consistently followed God's will and enjoyed a close relationship with him. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, when I looked at this and it says he's the only blameless man of his time, the only blameless man of his time. I know sometimes we feel alone or, you know, I don't have a lot of friends that believe the way I do or who support the things that I support. Out of the entire world, he was the only person who was blameless at that time. And so I think if anyone knows what it's like to stand up for something and to believe in something that maybe not everybody believes in, I think Noah has something to say because he went and did something against all odds. It goes on to say, now the earth had become corrupt in God's sight, and it was filled with violence. God observed all this corruption in the world, and he saw violence and depravity everywhere. So God said to Noah, I have decided to destroy all living creatures, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Yes, I will wipe them out from the face of the earth. Now, Noah had a wife and kids, so could you imagine him going to his wife and his kids and being like, okay, the Lord talked to me today, and we're the only blameless people here, and so he's going to kill everybody except us. Could you imagine like the Lord coming to you and being like, you're the only blameless person in the world, and everyone else is going to disappear. Now imagine if you're all the other people that are going to disappear. Would you be kind of frustrated if someone said, hey, I'm blameless and you're all going to die? Would that be kind of difficult? Talk about odds to stand up against is someone who's like, well, I'm sorry, but God said it. Like, don't kill the messenger. I'm just saying God said it. So let's look what God said to do. Make a boat from resinous woods and seal it with tar inside and out. Then construct decks and stalls throughout its interior. Make it 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. Construct an opening at the way around the boat, 18 inches below the roof. Then put three decks inside, bottom, middle, and upper, and put a door on the side. So since we were talking about football, I know that relates to a boat, right? this boat, because I had a problem visioning this. Like, to me, numbers, they're just numbers. Like, I need a picture. The length of the boat was 1.5 football fields. So we're not talking about, like, if you think about your house right now, it's probably many of those houses on the street. It's not like we could build it in most of our backyards. Some of us are like, I have acreage, I have a farm, you might be able to do it. But for most of us, if we started building this monstrosity in our backyard, it would be a big deal. And we'd probably have to get some zoning things covered to knock everybody else out, right? But I'm trying to relate to present day, like how obnoxious this would seem. Like, I know they didn't have little cul-de-sacs and, you know, little street lamps and stuff. But if you think about it, in his day, have been told to go build this monstrosity, and that's how he spent his time. Not to mention he was 600 years old when he did this. Like, it's not like he was 35, goes to the gym every day. And I mean, Steve Carell was, but in here it was 600. So let's read a little more. Look, I'm about to cover the earth with a flood that will destroy every living thing. Everything on the earth will die, but I solemnly swear to keep you safe in that boat with your wife and your son and their wives. And so then he's instructed to bring all the animals, and down at verse 22 it says, so Noah did everything exactly as God had commanded him. So I'm imagining myself as this person who's being told by God that everyone's going to die, I'm going to live, but for the next year I have to spend time building this giant monstrosity, and people are going to make fun of me the whole time. And then towards the end, it says in verse 7, or chapter 7, it talks about how the Lord told them to board the boat, but the floodwaters didn't come for a week later. So him and his family and his kids are on this boat with people probably surrounding them going, one, you're stupid, or two, let me in. And they're having to listen to this for a week of being like, well, I know I was instructed not to let them in, and yeah, right now I do feel kind of... Well, he didn't, because he had faith in the Lord. He wouldn't have done all that if he didn't have faith. And so then it goes down and talks about how the earth was covered for 150 days with water. So I know it rained 40 days or 40 nights, but 150 days, the boat just kind of went across. And there's times we feel like, Lord, are you doing anything in my life? He was in a boat with just his family and lots of animals. I don't even want to go into what that would have been like, just having all those animals around. But that's how he lived for 150 days. And then when it stopped, it started to recede. It took 2.5 months for the water to recede. So he spent a little over a year in this boat. But he did all of that because the Lord commanded him to. And then if you flip over to chapter 9 in the Genesis, verse 1, it said, God blessed Noah and his sons and told them, multiply and fill up the earth. And so through all of this, Noah's told to do something, Noah obeys, Noah is blessed. Now, it's not to say it wasn't hard during those times, but he heard the voice of the Lord, and he said, Lord, I fear you. I don't think that he would have done what he did if he didn't have the faith that he had to have to withstand all of those things, and if he didn't esteem the Lord as most high, because could you imagine all those people just coming to you? I mean, we have some opposition in schools and in society, but this is... Everyone at large was going to have to be swallowed by all this water. So I believe a lack of reverence is a lack of faith. And you're like, what does that mean? If you don't completely fear the Lord, then you're not going to completely have faith in him. Because if you don't esteem him as high, you're not going to do what it takes to honor him or to follow through with what he's told you to do. And so it took everything that Noah had to reverence the Lord and to put faith in him. So you're probably thinking, you know, I said we probably can't build an ark in our backyard. So what can we do? And I believe there's things that we can do that are bold for the Lord in this time and in this age. About a month ago, Pastor Terry told me about this news report that she had heard. And she was like, I really want you to hear this. And it was about students T-bowing, and they got suspended as a result of it. And so I'm going to show you a quick video clip about that in a second. But I wanted to share the heart of the pastors of this church. Love you guys so much. And they hear from the Lord. And so sometimes they can't be down here, and sometimes they can't be in Super Kids or at all the BI classes or all the different things. But they pray for you and they love you. And just today, Pastor Terry texted and was like, I want you to know that 1440 is on my heart. And so your pastors love you. And when they speak, when you hear us speaking, it's us, them speaking through us, just like the Lord has put people in your lives. So just know, this wasn't necessarily planned, but just know that they do love you and they do pray for you. And it meant enough to her to hear this story that she was like, you know, if it ever fits in to share with anybody, feel free to do it. And so I looked it up and I really thought it was something worth showing you guys. So if they have it ready, I want to play it. It's just a real quick clip. And it's about students who got suspended for T-bowing. So my main point of that is I'm not going to judge the students what their intent was. They're not going to be put on trial of did they really mean to honor God or honor Tim Tebow. But they were willing to stand up for something. And they were willing to take a stand and take it publicly. And it takes a lot of those of you who especially go to public school know what it's like to make a stand in front of a lot of people for him, the Lord, or just even to make a stand against something that's popular or belief. I mean, all you have to do is say, I don't like Justin Bieber, and you get like, oh my God, you don't like Justin Bieber. I mean, and that's not even, you know what I'm talking about, though. People will fight for him and will defend him like they know him, and that's something to me that's just earthly, petty. I mean, I don't even know if I'd say he has a good voice, but he is someone who's popular. But then we have someone on the other side who's standing for something, and he's willing to stand up for it. And you guys have the right, protected by the Constitution, to stand up for the Lord. And so if the Lord told you to do something, I am not saying, everybody tomorrow when you go to school in the halls, okay? I'm not saying that at all. Hear my heart on this. The Lord will direct you on different ways to stand up for him throughout your everyday life, or to take a stand. And if you're given a platform like Tim Tebow, what to say and what to do when you have the nation looking at you. But I wanted to use that as an example of someone who Noah had critics, and we saw that, but Tim Tebow has some critics, and he has some people standing up against him. And those students in the hallway got suspended for doing something, and now they're on national television. So now they have whoever's watched it, talking about them. And I saw it, now I'm sharing it with you. And so you can see how people can find out about things and talk about things. But I wanted to bring it back to the point of what are we willing to do? And what are we willing to stand up for despite what anybody else is doing? I think we need to be more concerned with the eternal impact of things than the immediate discomfort. And do you know what I mean by that? When I think sometimes get so focused on that's going to hurt or that's not going to feel good or ooh, that might be uncomfortable versus the lasting impact it could have on someone in their life or the lasting impact it could have in eternity in heaven. And so I wanted to ask the question, T-bowing was defined as something you're willing to do when people are doing something completely different. So what are you willing to do when other people are doing something completely different? I remember going to school lunches this past fall, and I look back and I can't even really identify that popular crowd or those people that, oh, you don't want to talk to them, or the scary people, you know, like, oh, watch out for them. I look back and that doesn't matter anymore, and I know when we're in it, it feels like it's a big deal, but I would challenge you to say, who do you hang out with and who do you spend time with? And is it because you're afraid of what people would think, or is it because you're reaching out to people and you're being love to somebody, or you're being an example to other people, or do you care more about what other people think? And then to switch the question around, what are you willing to stop doing when other people are doing it? There's a lot of things that culture does or that people do in society that would be popular or cool, but if we think twice about our motives for things, we start to see that maybe the Lord didn't lead us to do that. Maybe we did it out of discomfort, or maybe we did it out of peer pressure. And so we need to start thinking more about, Lord, what do you think about this? And what do you want me to do instead of what does my best friend want me to do? Or what did my coach tell me to do, even though I don't agree with it? And so going with the crowd is going to create followers, but fearing the Lord is going to make you a leader. If you turn Proverbs 29:25. It says, fearing man is a dangerous trap. So the more you put your attention and the more you esteem a person in your life, it's going to be harder for you to hear the Lord say, wait a second, I actually asked you to do this. but everybody else is telling you to do this. It's so loud. The voices are so loud that sometimes it's hard to just get quiet and be like, Lord, what do you want me to do? I know mom wants me to do this. Best friend says to do this. And youth pastor says to do this. But Lord, what do you want me to do? And is it backed up in the word? Because a lot of times we go to people for input. Well, I think. Well, I'm not really sure, but. And really what matters is what's in here and what he's told you to do. Because that's ultimately eternity, and that's what's impacted. And so I want to encourage you guys that God is the only one to fear. If the band could start coming up, we should reverence and esteem him above all else. And I know it can be hard and trying at times because there is those peer pressures, there are all of those things, or even those wants. But when you check on the inside and hear the still small voice, a lot of times you get quiet enough, you're going to know what to do or who to follow. Because greater is he that's in you than he's in the world. So no matter how loud those things can be or how hard circumstances can be, we can know that we're a solid rock and we lean on him, and so we're going to know what to do. And I know that right now with it being a new year, there's lots of resolutions going on and there's lots of goals setting. But I really want to encourage you guys, if you haven't set any, set them. It's important to have purpose and vision so that you stick to that and that you go. But when you're doing that, ask yourself, why am I doing this? Don't just do it because you did it last year or because it's a good routine or a good schedule. But ask yourself, Lord, is this what you want me to do right now? Because really the ultimate reason we should do anything is because the Lord's instructed us to. If we want to get healthier or lose weight, it's not just because we want to feel good about ourselves, but the Lord wants us to live long and he wants us to live strong so that we can impact his kingdom. And if we want to get out of debt, it's not just because we can say we're debt free, it's so that we can financially bless people or to help someone else succeed and prosper. And so a lot of times these goals, instead of getting the focus on us or the me in it, let's look at the Lord. Like, Lord, what do you want in this situation? And a lot of times people dictate what we do. And so tonight I just wanted to take some time where we think about those priorities and we reflect on the Lord and say, Lord, if you're not first, I want you to be first. And if there's some things right now that you're thinking about, oh, that's become kind of a priority, or this person actually dictates what I think and feel more than the Lord. If there's someone in your life that anytime something comes up and you think about them more or talk to them more than the Lord, then there should be kind of a shift where, Lord, I want to come to you first and I want to talk to you first about this. And so as the band plays this last song, I invite you to come up here. I'll be up here. Not necessarily, we're not going to pray for each other, but just to say, Lord, I surrender to you and I submit to you and I want you to be number one in my life. And a lot of times we view this altar as a place of like where I need to come to repent, or a place where I come where I need forgiveness. This altar is a place to worship the Lord. It's a place to say, Lord, I esteem you and I honor you and I want to put you first place in my life. I want to worship you. None of this matters anymore but you. It's a vertical relationship. And so getting our eyes on all of this is not how we're going to seek him. So when we go vertical, when we go higher, those things, you get to a higher place. And so coming up here isn't one of those shameful things. Sometimes we view it like, oh, they're going to the front. It's not like that. And I want to help you guys erase that thinking that this is a place where we come up and we submit. Or if you're back there and you just want to get on your knees or you just want to sit there, that's okay. But it's between you and God and obeying him and saying, Lord, this time is for you. How would you have me worship you? Amen.
1440 is a ministry of Eagle Mountain Church. For more information, or if you have questions about what you have heard here, visit 1440.com or email staff@1440.com.